So I'm currently a freshman at the University of Evansville in Indiana, on track for a Bachelor of Sciences in Theater with an emphasis on performance. Long story short, I'm going to college to be an actor. Among the various unemployment jokes I've heard, a couple of people have legitimately asked me why I act. I'd like to begin answering this, funnily enough, with a story. When I was in sixth grade, I was strong-armed by one of my theater teachers into joining the school forensics team. For those of you without children who are wondering why middle schoolers were competing in criminal investigations, forensics is a public speaking competition with categories ranging from mock news programs to infomercials to simply reading a story. I, being one of the only ones willing to do it, was pressured into the moments in history category, one of the driest, most dull sections to have to sit in on simply because it's a bloody history lesson, and I would very much like it if you would please bring up one of the funny infomercial people again. Thank you very much. Now, one of the first things explained to me was the need for a good topic and a tagline, something unique that breaks the mold and a quote the judges will remember you by. The time frame we were given to work with was 1200 to 1400 CE, so naturally, I did the discovery of tapioca pudding by a band of lost, absolutely desperate explorers. Part of my speech was the story of the explorers, not revealing the true subject of my research, with the final line of my presentation explaining that the entire time I was talking about the number one dessert choice in assisted living centers all over the country. And the best part about my piece? People laughed. Being a 12-year-old kid, starting out in middle school, pressured to stand up in front of a bunch of strangers in dress pants and a sports coat, you have no idea how relieving that felt. This honest moment right after the big reveal, where the room burst into chuckles and giggles and laughter at the revelation that I was talking about pudding the entire time. And it was one of the first times I ever felt really connected with a group of strangers like that. And it's probably also one of my first serious acting experiences, and largely contributed to my choice to go to college to get an actual degree for something a sixth grader can do. Thanks, Mom and Dad. But what amazes me to this day is just how a simple story, the discovery of tapioca, led to such a connection between people who had never met 15 minutes before. And even more so, how the other people in my category and I bonded over our presentations. I came to know certain people only through the stories. There was Samurai Kid, Medieval Weapons Guy, Dude with the Machu Picchu thing. Our stories came to define each of us because that's all we actually knew about each other. We didn't know each other's names or schools, just these collections of facts and stories. I freely admit, I will never be able to tell you their names, but I can still remember snippets of their presentations. Whether that's because of how small the category was besides the point. Part of the reason I'm an actor is to be a storyteller. That's actually kind of what I say to people who tell me that acting is lying. I'm not lying. I'm just telling somebody else's truth. I want to be able to share as many stories with as many people as I possibly can. Because our stories are a reflection of who we are. They're fantasies about what we wish we could be, or they're confessions of past failures and hopes to overcome them in the future, or they're moral lessons meant to pass down a message onto people, or even sometimes they're just something we tell ourselves and others to make people feel a little better in the long run. There's a quote that I remember when I think about these things, given to me by one of the greatest acting teachers I will ever have. If the eyes are the window to the soul, then the voice is the window to the heart. It's a bit broader than the idea of stories, but I feel it fits the topic well. We use our stories to show what lies in our hearts. Sometimes we tell them through music, sometimes through pictures, but we are constantly telling and retelling more stories than could ever be written down. Another story I'd like to share with you. I was recently in my college's production of Big Fish, a musical based on the Tim Burton film of the same name, about a boy growing up with a father who always told extravagant stories about himself, and the boy learning what was true and false and in between with the stories. The boy, growing up with his father, eventually became jaded to all of the tall tales, thinking that his father just wanted to show off and look cool to his son, driving a wedge between them eventually. We learn, though, through though the boy thought that the father told all of these stories to impress him, his dad was really trying to inspire him. If he just dreamed big enough and hoped hard enough and strived long enough, he could fight the metaphorical dragons in his life. His stories were a way of passing down his passion and love and excitement all through the medium of pure, unbridled imagination. The climax of the play comes when the son finishes his father's story, describing them breaking out of a hospital and heading back to a river from the opening of the show, where all of the characters and friends from the father's stories are waiting for him to tell him just how much they love him. His final words to his son are an apology for all of the failures and a hope that, when someone tells his story, he's remembered as something bigger than he was before he passes away in his son's arms, finally finding reconciliation. The stories we share tie us together and allow us a level of understanding and undiluted compassion that we rarely see nowadays. They let us share our hope and our faith with one another, and they let us share our love. With something as simple as a story, we let someone feel the love and triumph that they may be lacking. We give them a chance to believe, at least for a moment, that they're a brave hero fighting dragons, or a noble champion defending the weak, or someone who gets to have a happy ending. Tangentially related, following a rehearsal for Big Fish, near my campus is a restaurant called Rally's. If you've ever been to a Checkers, it's the same owners, just with a different name. So this Rally's is pretty small and right on the edge of one of the sketchier neighborhoods of Evansville. Rally's is open 24 hours, so it's a good place for like late-night meals and snack things. So when we get there, we ran into quite a few interesting characters, being the middle of the night. A couple of highlights ahead of us in line were a couple that were almost certainly high out of their minds. After ordering our food, a man came in claiming he did not receive the fries he ordered, arguing with the cashier until they eventually gave him a second set of fries, and we later found the missing fries uneaten in his bag sitting next to where he was sitting while he ate. The most interesting person we met that night was named Eric. He came up to us asking for help, explaining to us that his car had broken down earlier, thanking us profusely and showing us anything to prove he wasn't trying to murder us or mug us or such. We gave him a lift into Kentucky. It's not too far of a drive, about 5 minutes to the border. Small car shop that is AAA had outsourced to, so he needed to go down there and pay for the car. Along the way, he showed us pictures of his wife and child, and actually, he started talking to us about actors and movies once he found out that we were all theater people. After paying for the service, he comes rushing back with a baby bottle in his hand, and we drove him back home. I like this story not only because I find it curious that we saw so many vastly different people that night, but also because I love how humanizing it was. You never know who someone is or their story until you bother to sit and listen. Eric mentioned how most of the people around there wouldn't have given him the time of day, let alone a ride, because he was black. Never mind the very nice clothes that he was dressed in or the working phone that he was carrying. But the interesting twist was that some time ago, Eric saw a truck broken down on the side of the road with a little girl leaning out the back window waving for help. He pulled over, helped them get towed, and then he drove them over to a restaurant, got them a little something to eat. And the twist? Detailed into the back of the truck was the modern Confederate flag. But he stopped and helped them anyway. Not all of our stories are actively trying to help someone or inspire them. Sometimes neither the teller nor the listener even knows how important a story can be to them. Sometimes a story sucker punches us with emotions and we're snapped unawares into a completely new world. A whole new world, if you will. My next story for you actually comes from a choreographer for a show that I was in a while back. And I get a little choked up every time I tell it, so this is the waterworks warning. His name's Jeff. And Jeff is a fairly prolific actor and at one point was even Quasimodo in one of the Disney World or Land, I'm not sure which, productions of Hunchback of Notre Dame. I know Whole New World is from Aladdin, but you tried transitioning from Car Troubles into Disney. For anyone who, like me, has never seen The Hunchback of Notre Dame, the basic plot is this. Quasimodo, the titular character, is taken in as a baby by a bigoted, fire and brimstone religious judge, and is kept hidden from the world due to his appearance. He's given the job of the bell ringer and the caretaker of the Notre Dame Cathedral, and his only interactions are with the judge, who is emotionally and physically abusive, and the imaginary gargoyles, who serve the obligatory non-human companion role. He falls in love with a woman in a traveling group named Esmeralda. The judge, also falling for Esmeralda, sees her beauty as evil and corruptive, and because he can't have her, decides to have her executed. Quasimodo saves her, the judge falls to his death, and Quasimodo's existence is exposed, and he is finally accepted by the world. He unfortunately doesn't end up with Esmeralda, though that's due to a subplot with a prince and some other stuff that isn't really important right now. So Jeff finishes a performance, and on this theater, there's a small part of the stage that juts out into the audience, kind of like a fashion runway. He goes out and is taking his bows, and he's high-fiving kids and all that, and someone grabs his hand. He looks down, and he sees the hand that's holding his only has a couple of fingers. And he looks up, and he sees a kid with various physical disfigurements, and the kid is crying and smiling, and amidst all the cheering, Jeff hears the kid shout out, "We did it, Quasimodo. We did it. We did it. Not you or I or they, but we." This story, an adaptation of an animated movie roughly based on an old folk legend that is extremely factually inaccurate and partially racist, had such a profound base impact on that child that the only way to express it was that they, the two of them, had managed to defeat all of the people who tried to tell them they weren't good enough or pretty enough or anything enough to be happy, to be loved. Through this story, they made a connection of happiness and love and life that I guarantee you will stay with them for the rest of their lives. I'm going to tell you right now, I don't have an easy way to transition into my next story. The previous song lyric transition is proof enough of that. And it's one of the hardest stories for me to tell, partially due to the fact that there are a lot of unresolved pieces and it's still kind of going on. So I'll just go into it. I went to Milwaukee High School of the Arts, a magnet school in, you guessed it, Milwaukee, where I was a theater major and had 2 hours of theater classes per day. My sophomore year, I was bumped up a level in my theater classes, so I was with people a grade ahead of me. And one of those people was a boy named Juan Carlos Aguila. It wasn't really into my junior year, his senior year, that I got to know him, when I also had English class with him and was on the slam poetry team with him. He was always a very large source of energy. And he also was very loud and had a very strong personality that either loved you or hated you. One of my favorite memories of him is a character named Vinny the Vent Boy, a high schooler who made his way around bullies by crawling through school vents, a character that was specifically written for him after he came up with the idea in one of our plays. Juan Carlos died this past January. He had a disease that ran in his family and started to have complications from it his senior year, and was hospitalized a few times due to seizures before he eventually succumbed to it. I'll admit that I didn't know him extremely well. We weren't best friends, and in all honesty, he probably didn't like me very much for most of the time that I knew him. But he was my friend. And one of the hardest things I've ever done in my life is to watch someone else's story end. To know someone who stopped making memories and stories to tell in the future. I occasionally find myself talking to him or thinking about him, and for some reason, it gives me a lot of comfort and stability. There have been several times that he's held me together. I don't know what any of you believe about what happens after you die, and I'm not going to pretend to know. But he's convinced me that you don't end. Your stories never finish. As long as there is one person who remembers them and tells and retells them, you never just disappear. Your story gets passed on and woven into other stories. And I suppose that's also my interpretation of the whole interdependent web of life principle. All of our stories are linked together, and we will never be able to fully separate ourselves from one another. As long as I can remember him, he isn't really gone. Now I'm going to leave you all with one last extremely tone-shifting story. Funnily enough, it's actually about writing this sermon. This all started several months back after Amy's silent auction service about hand jobs. A group was going out to lunch and discussing the many ways one could word the title of a service to ensure hilarity. And somewhere in there, I joked about me doing a sermon someday. Lo and behold, shortly thereafter, I was informed that I was scheduled for a Sunday in November and to get the title to the board so that they could put it in the calendar as soon as possible. After my initial shock and disbelief, I was rescheduled for a December date when I would actually be in town and began to decide on what I would talk about for 15 to 20 minutes. The first topic I attempted from my list of several was Remember Kids, Don't Smoke, a commentary on how we focus on prolonging life instead of enjoying it. Then came This Above All, a sermon on remaining true to oneself through the lens of a dick joke telling William Shakespeare. Third in the line was The 500 Miles We Walk, discussing the effort we put into finding and holding on to love. Then I came back to the Shakespeare bit, but tried to squeeze in a whole bunch of other ideas I had. Some of the better subjects that never fully saw the light of day, a discussion on our tendency to make monsters out of people we don't like, the power of words that we use, and a point about how fair and equal treatment are two completely different things, and what I will only refer to you, even in conversation, as Hitler, Stalin, and Mussolini, unexpected role models. Finally, in late September, I settled on this. And along the way, I realized something. This is really hard. I do not envy Amy. This one time was nerve-wracking enough. I don't know how she does this nearly every single week. Surprising to me, as well as to anyone who knows me, it was actually very difficult to come up with something to talk about for that long. I would usually get about to like the 10-minute mark and just run out of stuff to talk. Legitimately shocking. But in all seriousness, looking back at these stories, I realized that I don't just want to tell other people's stories. I want to make my own. And I think that's something we all want, to be able to leave a story behind for people to tell. We're all heroes of our own stories. We just want them to be big and epic enough that they're worth remembering and passing down to the future. The end.